Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Hi, welcome to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
How's it going?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing great. How was your week?
It was good.
Busy.
Considering it's Monday.
Well, all right. This is an episode out there that I know a lot of people have been looking forward to, at least on my end, people that I've been talking to. Do you want to let us know what we're talking about?
Today we're going to be discussing the book The Outsiders in the movie by S.E. Hinton.
Right. And the film was by Francis Ford Coppola. It came out in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think this might be a very interesting episode. And I've been not talking to you at all about it because I wanted to be surprised. So tell me, Romy, how much you just can't get enough of this book and how much you just love this book.
So let me explain to the listeners.
It's never a good thing.
This is a book I read my either freshman or sophomore year of high school. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it was freshman. And I hated it. I hated the book. I hated that one. I hated a separate piece. They were boring. I had no connection to them.
You always talk about Separate Piece.
Yes, because that was just as bad as... No, I want to say The Outsiders was worse. So Separate Piece, I remembered the plot and I remembered what happened. At least it had some sort of impact on me.
It had an impact in you?
No.
Okay.
Let me say that again. A Separate Piece had an impact on me to the enough emotionally to where I remember major plot points. The Outsiders had no impact on me. To the point where I was surprised while reading it. I don't remember any of that from when I was a kid, or a high schooler.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, freshman year, 14, 15, okay. Yeah.
Well, that answers the question of when you first read it.
Mm-hmm.
I first read it my eighth grade year, because we read it in eighth grade when I was younger.
Okay.
I remember very specifically, and you know what? This copy right here is the copy that I had when I bought it in eighth grade. And that was back in 2006, I bought it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was late 2006.
Have you beat? I found my copy, and I'm going through my storage stuff right now, my books in particular, and I found my high school copy. So mine's from 1993, 92.
We had an assignment for my English class where we had to create chapter titles.
Okay.
For every chapter, so you can see all my chapter titles in there.
Wow.
And then when you get to them in the book, they're listed in there too. Some of them were dumb.
I mean, you're eighth grade.
Some of them I was actually pretty impressed by. Like chapter 6, The Burning of a Sacred Realm. Yeah. Some of them are fine. Some of them are weird. But, you know, I was 13.
Yeah.
Okay, so you read it for the second time.
Correct.
For this podcast.
Correct.
And
it was also the second time I saw the movie. We watched it in class once again.
I figured.
They
wheeled in the TV.
They did wheel
the
TV in.
They popped in the VHS tape.
We might have had DVD at that point. I don't remember. But they definitely... It was funny because in watching the movie, the only memory I had of the movie was one scene. And that scene, as I had it in my memory, never popped up. But something close to it did.
Hmm.
And...
You misremembered?
I kind of misremembered, yeah.
Okay, well... You graduated high school before this, but I don't know if you knew this. Francis Ford Coppola released like a director's cut.
I did see that.
The Outsiders.
Yes.
He calls it the complete novel, the whole novel, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that one actually is much closer.
That's what I heard.
To the novel. And I don't want to jump the gun here, but when he was writing the script and he directed the original 1983 film,
mm-hmm.
they shot everything that was basically in the book.
That's what I assumed.
But then the studio cut down for time.
Yeah.
And they were worried that people would get bored and that they said a bunch of things. But it was basically a studio decision to cut 30 minutes out of the film.
I didn't notice it was a half hour longer.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that when we get to
it. Did you actually watch it?
I have seen it, but I didn't watch it this time around. I just watched the original 83 version for
this
time.
It was 20 cents more for renting that version than the original, and so I just went with the cheaper version.
It's fine. We're on the same page then.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not much I have to tell you about the director's cut because it's just more that was in the book.
That's what I read. Yeah, I did read it.
It was much more like about it. The continuity and the chronology and stuff that's in the book. Yeah, it surprised even Essie Hinton because she was there for the filming.
And she was in the movie.
I know. Yeah. I know. But she was there for the filming. And so even she was surprised that when they watched it, how much was cut out.
Oh, okay.
Because she was like, well, we filmed all this.
I wouldn't have known she was in it, except we happened to pause the film. It was watching on a Prime when they show you the names of the actors on the scene.
Like the X-ray or whatever it is. Yeah.
And so we paused it and they're like, and it said Nurse Essie Hinton. I was like, what? That's the author.
She's in the three movies that were adaptations of her books in the 80s.
Okay.
So the first one was Tex, which came out in 82. And Matt Dillon was the protagonist in that one.
Oh, okay.
And then Outsiders came out the following year, and then a few years later they did Rumblefish. And Francis Ford Coppola did that one as well. And so she's in that one too. In Tex, she has a cameo as a teacher.
Oh, okay.
And then in Rumblefish, she has a cameo as like a prostitute.
Oh, interesting.
She's just like, hey buddy, looking for a date, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll get to the meat of this real quick here. Now that you've read it a second time at your age of... as you do.
I think they all know my age if you've listened to
Well, you've been out of high school for over 25 years.
I have. Has it been that long? Yep. Yes, you know what? My 30th reunion is coming up.
There you go.
Next year.
Yep. And I graduated in 2011 from high school, but I read this back in 8th grade. I think I've read it maybe two or three times since then.
Okay.
Because I fell in love with her writing. Essie Hinton's... So for the very few people out there who don't know this, Essie Hinton is a woman.
Fun story.
Go ahead.
Or fun fact. I did not know that.
Until when?
Until I was reading the book and I was reading, I think, the introduction.
Like just this time around?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea it was a woman. Essie Hinton, it could be any... thing.
Yeah, that's a very common thing. You like with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
They didn't want guys to not read it because a woman wrote it. Especially because of the content of this one is mainly about guys, you know.
Exactly. And so it actually shocked me. I was reading the intro and it was the version I read for this was a anniversary edition, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from the library. I borrowed the Kindle version.
You're like, I'm not buying this.
Yeah, I was not going to buy it. Yes, there's certain books. Anyway, and so he said her.
Mm-hmm.
So unless he was misgendering her, it had to be a woman. And I was like, wait, what? This is about juvenile gangs, and it was written by a young person.
Yep.
And it threw me for a loop, will admit. I was like, wow, she must have really been good friends with people who, to be able to get into the psyches like that, basically.
So
who were in that
I'll give a very brief understanding of Essie Hinton.
Okay.
We don't need to do like super in-depth on her. We can kind of bring some things up here and there. She grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and still lives there with her husband. And she wrote this book when she was in high school.
Yes, yes.
She started writing it when she was 15, and she basically published it at 17.
When she graduated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because she said that she failed her creative writing class.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
And I think she wrote a version of this for class, like a shorter version, and her teacher did not like it. Which, again, this is the 60s, right? And so she was, there's not like a ton to talk about. Like, she grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She is self-proclaimed saying that she is not shy and reclusive because she's actually very friendly and outgoing. It's just, she's just super chill, basically. Every interview I watched with her, she is like the most chill person I've ever met.
Interesting.
But every time anybody else talks about her, it definitely seems like she comes alive when she's around people that she gets along well with.
Okay.
Because when they were filming The Outsiders, I guess a bunch of the boys started calling her mom. And like she was very friendly with them and like, would look after them and help them out and stuff.
Wow.
I mean, at that point, like she was close to an age of their mom anyway, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, she met her husband when she was in college and... She's kind of just lived a quiet life since then, but she's written many books and she's sold millions of copies of her books and
okay, cool.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to talk about. She likes to keep her private life separate from her writing life.
Okay.
But she's on Twitter. Apparently, she interacts with people all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
When I was on Facebook still years ago, I was following her, and she would interact with people.
I'm going to check. In fact, if she is, I'm going to tweet her right now and say,
Essie Hinton,
I do not like your books.
You're so mean. Okay, well, then that answers my question. You did not like this book this time around.
Okay, so it's a little more complicated than that. I think to say that I didn't like it, it was one of those books that grew on me as I read it this time around.
Okay.
Okay, I want to say I had a similar reaction as I did with Great Gatsby.
Okay, okay.
I won't say that I will necessarily read this book ever again, so sure. We already have my rating. But at the same time, especially in the opening of the book, I was so bored from chapters 1 to 4.
Really?
I think it took me almost a month to get through chapters 1 through 4. Because I started it, I'm like, if this is what the book's going to be like, it's boring me to death.
It doesn't help that you don't remember what happens. Because when I read it, I'm like, I know what's going to happen, and I'm reading it because I'm excited.
Yes, because later on, I read somewhere that they basically said the first four chapters are the outlining of a lot of his thoughts and the exploration of who the characters are.
Exactly. Well, it's a lot of exposition.
Yes.
I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I really love her writing because it's always moving.
Yeah.
Like she does such a great job of telling you so much without it feeling like she's just talking to you.
I think for me, the first four chapters, I got a sense of her being young.
Well, she was.
She was. And I felt like I was reading something a really smart kid wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But I will agree with you. Once I got to chapter 4, I can't remember if it was 4 or 5, but basically where the story really picks up. So before, from running to the park, all that, where the action picks up, that's when I started enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I read through the rest of it. I don't know if you could hear my snap, but like
in
that.
Heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. Exactly. And I was really, like, at that point, I forgot I was reading a kid's...
Young adult book.
A young adult book. Or a kid, something written by a kid.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed the rest of the book. It was just those first four chapters that were very difficult.
I really like the world building in her first few chapters, though, because she does such a great job of bouncing around in time and place in one chapter.
Yeah.
And explaining all these. She introduces, I think, 8 characters in like 3 pages, and yet you know who they are.
Yeah.
And you don't get lost. So I really appreciate
that,
because it's really
easy
for that to be a quagmire
of
characters. You're like, wait, who's this? Who's this now?
I know. It's not like, what's his name? The Game of Thrones guy. He introduces 8 billion characters in one novel.
Yeah. I have not read any of his books.
I like them, but I kind of wonder, too, like at that point, or if it would be interesting, maybe you know if you heard anything in the interviews, if she rewrote or kind of shored up certain aspects as time went on. Or was it a free flow, just writing straight through like an essay?
She said this was the easiest book for her to write.
Okay.
I think from what I've pieced together that she wrote a version of it just...
Well, there's definitely the class version she turned in as a paper.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, there's that. But then it seemed like she just kind of just sat down and just wrote it.
Mm.
And I don't know what her editing process was like, but it definitely seemed like it came pretty easy. But then she suffered for 4 years from writer's block.
Oh, wow.
Because this did... It didn't do well at first, like, because it was so different for its time.
Yeah.
But she definitely struggled for about 4 years. And then I think he was still her boyfriend at the time, told her that she needed to, like, set time aside and then just work on it, even if it's trash.
Yeah.
Like, just start writing again.
I've heard that from authors, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, he kind of, like, helped her get back into writing. And then she wrote several other books afterwards. And so her other books are a little different. Like, they feel like they're definitely the same vein, and they definitely feel like her writing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see her style change a bit.
Interesting.
Like, by the time you get to That Was Then, This Is Now, which is kind of a follow-up to this one, but with some different characters.
Yeah.
Ponyboy's actually in that one, but he's a very, very side character.
Okay.
And then once you get to, like, Rumblefish especially, it's definitely... You might not like it as much because it's definitely a little more nihilistic.
Oh.
But it's more mature in tone and that sort of thing. But it definitely is tightened up in style.
Okay. I might nowadays, because there has been a couple of nihilistic comics I've been reading lately that are very nihilistic.
But I like hers because even when she does kind of venture into some nihilism,
mm-hmm.
she still has these moments where you can tell the morals and the messages that that are coming across.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, because even in this one, it's very easy to, like, over-glorify the greasers and stuff if you want to. Mm-hmm. But then even in the story, the greasers are telling characters like Ponyboy to that he can be better. Like, you don't need to be like this. Like, there's so much more to life. And
There's the chipping away of the pride, mm-hmm. of his pride, because there's so much pride in the identity.
And not becoming hard.
Yeah. So there was something that I had a hard time at first understanding, and I think it was probably during the first four chapters. In the introduction to the version I read, the guy who wrote the introduction, he talked about how this book has impacted so many people and how, I guess, she has gotten so many letters from people who discuss how they've, it not only can they identify with aspects of it so strongly, it has changed their lives. And I remember turning to my wife and telling her about it and saying, I have no idea. I have no connection. And that's how I was in high, because they all mentioned that when they read it in high school, they felt that. And today we barely watched the movie today.
I watched it this morning, but I've seen it a couple times before.
And so she outlined for me why they probably feel that way. And she's just coming, doing it from the movie. And so I quickly did, well,
there are definitely people who really like the movie who may not read the book.
True. But no,
especially because of the actors in the movie.
Yeah. No, but this was in regards to why people identify with it and why I did not. And I think it clicked in my head why I didn't. But I think it's just because I'm different.
Well, I think this is going to sound weird, but I think you and I are a little different than a lot of other guys that we've maybe been in school with.
No, and exactly. That was exactly what I came to the conclusion is that when I was a kid, especially in middle school, I didn't have to fit in. I did not fit with any group, and I was okay with it. And so that's the identity piece. I didn't have to have a group, and I didn't feel like I was stereotyped. Yeah, I was stereotyped as a nerd and a geek, but it didn't bug me, and I didn't really think about it back then. Mm-hmm. Whereas I look at other people I know, and even young people today, where they have to have, not necessarily the same, I don't think today's Utes, in honor of Ralph Macchio, they're not, I think, as from what I hear, high schools still have their groupings, but there's a lot of mending of, like, they kind of overwatch.
It's not as rigid.
It's not
as
rigid.
We talked about that a bit with, like, Heathers and...
Yeah. But I think they still feel that based on your friend groups.
Well, everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to feel like there's a camaraderie. And so everybody wants to find other people who think similarly to them and things like that.
But I think it's most people really, really need that. When I was in high school, I didn't. I was okay being by myself.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't really identify with the book, perhaps.
I understand where you're coming from. I think I told myself I was okay with being by myself, mm-hmm. but I didn't like being by myself. Mm-hmm. But I was also the kid who knew there was life after public school.
Okay.
And that I somehow in my head knew that my real life, quote unquote, would start after public school. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of just waiting. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I was doing what I had to do, you know, taking the classes I had to take. And, like, I had friends, but, you know, I was just kind of getting through it. Mm-hmm. And so looking back, I think I would have done it a little differently now, but, you know, it's useless to say that because you're past it. But you know, I think I can see where you're coming from, but for me, it was a little different, but we'll get to that real quick. I want to talk about S.C. Hinton a little bit more before I talk about that. The other thing I wanted to say about S.C. Hinton is when she was growing up, she says, like, she knew, obviously, the social differences mm-hmm. and stuff, but she didn't realize some of the negative connotation of, like, the quote-unquote greasers or the hoods or things like that, because she was hanging out with these guys, and I guess she said she was kind of like a tomboy a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, she had girlfriends, but then she hung out with these guys a lot as well, and so she didn't realize until other people started mocking them and, like, fighting them that and calling names and things that, oh, my friends are greasers.
Yeah.
And so it kind of opened her eyes to that a little bit. But she had a moment when she was in high school where she witnessed a friend of hers who was a greaser who got jumped by a Soch.
Oh, okay.
Who was like one of the socials.
Yeah.
And so that ended up being the opening to this book where mm-hmm. Ponyboy gets jumped.
Yeah.
So she said, like, it's almost exactly the same. It's just, you know, the characters changed.
Mm-hmm. There was an interview at the end of the book with her, and she did mention that. She said how
She's very direct, which I like.
Yeah. Her friends would all try to figure out which one of them were which character.
Yes. And then she's like, she said,
it's a composite or
she
something?
Says that, kind of said it's impossible that her friends or the people she was around wouldn't end up as elements in the story.
Yes.
But yeah. She didn't base any characters after anybody. Correct. Specifically. Yeah. She says more than anything, every character in this book are a composite of her.
Oh, I don't know.
She said specifically Ponyboy is the most like her.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to give a quick introduction to Essie Hinton here. This is from the Encyclopedia, encyclopedia.com, which I was really happy with this when I found it. S.E. Hinton irrevocably altered the course of juvenile literature in America with her first novel, The Outsiders. It was published when she was 17 and was her stark answer to the fluffy high school stories about proms and dates typical of the 1960s. She said, "Where is reality?" in an essay explaining her motivation in the New York Times book review. In other narratives for teens, she could not find the, quote, the drive-in social jungle, the behind-the-scenes politicking that goes on in big schools, the cruel social system, end quote. Or the teenagers who lived in those settings. In contrast, her story was real, graphic, emotional, and true to the challenges of being a teenager in 20th century America. In addition, it was an exciting narrative that captured teenagers' attention. It drew a wide audience, particularly boys, who were reluctant readers. 30 years after its publication, the novel remains immensely popular and has sold more than 4 million copies in the United States. I'll give a very, very, very brief synopsis.
Go
I think
it's
a story that most people are familiar with, so I don't need to go super in-depth, but... The novel is the story of a traumatic time in the life of a recently orphaned 14-year-old boy named Ponyboy Curtis. He lives on the east side, the wrong side of the tracks, a member of the lower class and a gang of greasers. Quiet and dreamy, Ponyboy has conflicts with his older brother and guardian, Daryl, who keeps the family together. The greasers, whom Ponyboy distinguishes from hoods, are the heroes of the tale. Set against them are the upper-class socials, or socias, who enjoy drinking, driving nice cars, and beating up greasers. The circumstances of this social situation result in the death of three teens. The story explores the themes of class conflict, affection, brotherly love, and coming of age in a way that young people readily appreciate. This novel's portrayal of disaffected youth has been criticized for its violent content, but it is now regarded as a classic of juvenile literature. It can be considered one of the first examples of the quote-unquote young adult genre. And after its publication, literature for teens gained a new realism, depth, and respect for its audience.
Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I did not know how to pronounce Soch.
No, when I first read it,
I was like,
back in 8th grade, I would say socks.
I did too.
Yes.
I'm like, ooh, the socks.
Oh yeah, those socks.
And then when I finally Googled
I watched the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I think I Googled it. Or in the interview, I think they might have provided a pronunciation for it. Something like
probably,
that.
Probably, yeah.
And I was like, oh, Soches. That makes sense. Soch, I don't... Still, I'm not sure where... High society, is that what they're referencing?
Yeah, and it's not even high society so much as it's just those who are well off, who have money and stuff. Like, they're not... They're called rich,
but
and I think they even call themselves rich, but they're definitely middle class.
Middle class, yeah.
Yeah. Very quickly, for those out there who may not know this, and you can contribute to this if you want to, a brief, very brief history of greasers.
Why? Because I was one back in the day?
You might know. I don't know.
Yes, I was a greaser back in high school.
And Rosemead.
And Rosemead. Mm-hmm.
You know all about it.
Back when I was a kid in the 50s.
Yeah, you're gangbanging.
Ghetto intellectual.
Yep.
Anyway.
Exactly. Some people have some false ideas of what a greaser is.
Yeah.
In part because of, you know, over glorification of the past and the sanitization of the past. Mm-hmm. And especially TV shows like Happy Days with the Fonz and things like that.
Grease,
the musical, I was going to say, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even in those, you can see some of the darker elements. So greasers has always kind of been a derogatory term. When in some of the research I found, it said it started in the 19th century. With like laborers who would actually get greased up. And so it was usually derogatory. And because those were people who were like in the bottom of the barrel, like they were different ethnic groups that other society people didn't like and things like that. Usually a lot of like Irish and Italian and sometimes, you know, African American, things like that. But by the time you got to the 40s, it was like a post World War II movements where once he was getting slowly into the 50s, it was a countercultural, subcultural movement. And it was heavily rooted in the working labor class.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you could see that in the clothing they would wear and the music they listened to and the activities and so on. But then it just became, it became an identity, you know, where even apparently some middle class kids who were rebelling would hang out and act like greasers as a way to kind of get back at parents and society or whatever. But at its root, it is definitely like a social economic thing.
Definitely.
And by the end of the 60s, it had kind of waned and fallen away. But also because of that time, you were getting, you know, the hippie movement and things like that, which was different. But
mm-hmm.
that's a very brief understanding of it. And they even said that it's difficult to analyze because it was so fluid, and that you can be a greaser without being a hoodlum. But you could be a hoodlum and a greaser.
Yeah.
And so it just depended, you know, like it wasn't a rigid thing.
I pretty much know more about what you're talking about right now, kind of the more, I don't want to say whitewashed, but the more cleaned up version that we see in media and in movies and stuff.
It's definitely not uncommon to go to, like, if you're going to a 1950s party, for a guy to go as a greaser.
Correct. So for where I come from, the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so L.A., my family comes from L.A.
Right.
So for our version, we're the pachucos.
Right. That was definitely starting in like the 30s and 40s.
Correct. And I actually had a great uncle who was a pachuco who ended up, I can't remember the whole timeline.
Was he in the LA riots?
Not that my family has ever talked about, but he definitely.
We don't talk about that.
There's a lot they don't talk about in family history, yes. But anyway, I know he got married, had kids, and he ended up becoming a Christian. And so they were going to kill him because that was the only way out. So he ended up packing everyone up and moving to Washington State.
Oh, it was one of those things.
One of those things. Yeah. But he ended up
changing his
life.
Sounds like he was in like a real gang.
He was, yeah. My grandma tells me, because it was her brother, that she was even afraid of him at times, but they respected him. But it was a fearful respect.
Yeah, and that's something, if you even look in the book,
mm-hmm.
you see there's a difference between the greasers and like their little gang,
yeah,
and then the other gangs, like there were like
the
other greasers
yeah.
who are like real hoods,
yeah.
and they're like, and so they're like, we don't mess around with them because they're like the ones that are gonna go to jail and are gonna ruin their lives,
yeah.
and stuff. Whereas, you know, Pony Boy and his brothers Soda Pop and Dairy,
mm-hmm.
the Curtis family, you know, they're just in a social economic position, and their friends are all greasers,
correct.
And all of their friends come from very bad homes, like definitely on the lower end of society, like with money and stuff.
I mean, they kind of have a connection to them through one of the characters, Dallas.
Yeah.
Deli.
Yeah.
There's even a line where that if it wasn't for
them, the boys,
yes.
that Derry would be a sush.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and because there's that character in the Rumble that Derry knew and
mm-hmm.
like played football with,
yeah.
and stuff. I think part of why they say that is because, in my understanding,
mm-hmm.
is the Derry is so focused on improving his life and improving
mm-hmm.
their situation, similar to the Sochas.
Yeah.
Except for the Sochas are there.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the Sochas family, it's like you got to work hard, you're going to go to college, you're going to do what you got to do. Whereas in the greaser families, they don't expect any of that. And
yeah.
it's like, you're just going to be stuck here with the rest of us and that sort of thing. And so that's why I always kind of thought they thought that way about Derry, because he wanted to improve their life and to go somewhere. And he did get along with some of those kids. And
yeah, he would have been, had the parents not died,
right.
he would have gotten out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of, they don't explain the timeline. But it sounds like they were friends with the others for a long time because they were like the neighborhood friends, you know,
mm-hmm.
like we get 2-Bit and Johnny, obviously. But like they all come from families that didn't want them.
Correct. Yeah.
Like they're either abusive or neglectful.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Curtis family just kind of adopts them and takes them in. And
yeah.
It's like that open door policy
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And for me, as a 13-year-old and even kind of now, that camaraderie and that like brotherly affection,
mm-hmm.
even like with the friends, that was what attracted me to the book.
Interesting.
I really liked that. And I really liked when I was younger, I didn't know Essie Hinton was a girl, but
yeah.
but it makes some sense now. But I really appreciated the emotional aspects of these characters.
Yeah.
Because it's a way that you can look into the mind and the emotions of a guy, and it felt real.
Hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
At least to me, you know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
And I don't think you see that in a lot of literature where they talk about guys. And
no.
So, I mean, obviously, you can make the argument she's a woman talking about it, so it's going to be different, but I related to it, and I'm a guy, so.
I mean, I think because men in general, especially boys, the underlying emotions are not that complicated. And so if she, as a 16, 14, 15-year-old, had friends and she sat, and as a guy, when you have usually there's that maternal instinct, whether just from many women in general, and to sit there, like, I remember this. I remember having female friends, and you just blurt out your life to them. You blurt out things you would never share with the guys. And I think yeah. that might have been fodder that she utilized for the, you know, her writings.
Sure, yeah.
So in many ways, she
especially
probably,
if they had a few drinks.
She was kind of like, yeah, well, yeah, they were drinking and smoking at this age.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, she was, in many ways, she was kind of like a reporter / psychologist.
She was kind of like a conduit.
Yeah.
Where she was just taking all this
information
and
utilizing it.
She wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she, I think in many ways, like that's where I felt when I, like, maybe not so much in the beginning, but in the latter part of the book, I felt like I was reading someone who understood young men and what truly goes on in them.
Well, and then it wasn't flat. Like these characters were pretty well-rounded. Like, it's funny because they almost feel like stock characters in that, like, they're very... She does a good job because she focuses on characteristics of the characters for you to understand them and remember them.
Yeah.
But then she will elaborate and she will flesh them out and round them out.
Okay.
And so, like, even, like, 2-Bit has moments later on where he's more serious and, like, he'll tell Ponyboy, like, he won't joke. And you'd be like, Derry likes you. Like,
yeah.
Derry loves you. Like, he's hard on you because he knows you can do better.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he'll say things like that, and it's like, oh, he's not messing around. Like,
yeah.
He knows. Like, he jokes around a lot, but he knows.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he's even the one later on in the book who tells... Because there's a couple times where he's like, I don't know why I gave you that bottle, Ponyboy. You wouldn't have hit anybody with it. And then later on, he's, like, shocked that Ponyboy, like, breaks a bottle to, like, go after the Socias because they were getting aggressive with him at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2-Bit gets scared because he's like, Ponyboy, like... You can't do this.
Yeah.
You're losing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked those moments in the book because it really felt like these were real people.
Correct. Yeah. No, I agree. And that, I think that's what softened me towards the book as it continued on, was seeing that transition in which she went from the narrative and the expository into the more psychological, you know, and heart of the matter.
Yeah, well, and it's fun because it's kind of a character study. It's funny, every time we do this podcast,
yeah.
I get more analytical about what I'm taking in than I would if I was just enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I think you've said that too.
Mm-hmm.
So for this time around, I actually got more out of it than I have in the past, which I didn't think I'd get more out of it than I have, but I have now. This last time I was reading it, I realized that this is just about Ponyboy.
Okay.
And his growth.
The book, yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so it's not a plot-driven story. Like, there is a lot of plot in it, but it's not a plot-driven story because it's about him.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't say it, but, like, the main plot of the story is Johnny and Ponyboy get attacked because they were hanging out with the girlfriends of some Socias at a drive-in.
Mm-hmm.
And so to protect themselves, Johnny ends up stabbing and accidentally killing one of the boys. And so then they take off and they go into hiding with the help of Dally.
Yeah.
I know so many names. But then eventually they kind of become heroes right before they're going to turn themselves in.
Mm.
Because they save a bunch of kids who were caught in a fire at the church they were hiding out in.
Yeah.
But then that ends up, spoilers, making it so that in the end, Johnny ends up dying from the burns and stuff when he was helping the kids. And then Ponyboy has to figure out how to move on from this.
Yeah.
Because he was so close to Johnny, even though sometimes he was a little mean to him because he's 14.
Yeah.
But I really noticed this time around that this is a story about Ponyboy wanting to prove himself as a man and then starting to fall into the negative aspects of that in the story before he is rerouted.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's reminded in like the memorable Stay Gold Pony Boy moment. And it's just reinforced by that, but you can see him learning that lesson up until the end when he decides to write the story of what he did almost as like a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was losing himself so much in what was happening and in the loss of his friends and things like that, that he almost became the worst part of who he was.
Yeah. In some ways, I saw a lot of parallel with Great Gatsby in regards to proving of yourself. But this is one where I think, unlike Gatsby, Pony Boy has enough men in his life, which is a whole other podcast within itself, in regards to the importance of mentorship.
Right.
And how important that is for a young man, and even, heck, even us older men, it's important. And he had enough of that and enough men who saw his potential, cared for him enough to do their best to help him apply the brakes. And it even showed how, I think, the more peripheral characters, like the, is it an English professor or the English teacher,
mm-hmm.
who helps him write the, or encourages him and tells him I think he's told him like his grades were, he wasn't going to pass or something.
Yeah, because he was always a good student, but his grades had fallen so badly.
Because of what happened, and I'm assuming like PTSD, he suffered from it.
And it just sounded like he was just giving up too.
Yeah. It's kind of, the depression.
It's like, what's the point? Like, I'm just going to be stuck here.
He was kind of in a depressive state. Yeah.
And the teacher knew, like, you can do better than this, and I want to help you.
Yeah. But that it still showed the importance of that.
Right.
And then he goes back, and then he reads the note that Johnny left him in the book of Gone with the Wind, and it concludes the
And then the book ends where it begins.
It does, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first read this, I was told to buy the book by my English teacher in my 8th grade year, and she at least said we needed to acquire it. Like, I didn't have to buy it, but I bought it.
Yeah.
But she told us, don't read it until we read it in class, and then I did it anyway. So I remember reading it, I think, over Christmas break, and I fell in love with it.
Interesting. Okay.
And I didn't understand it like I do now, and, you know, I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a very shallow understanding of a lot of it. And so for me, it was just like, I was really attracted to that, like, that gang mentality, that camaraderie, that we're here for each other. We're going to help each other out. We're always got you back, you know, that sort of thing. Like, the good aspects of a gang I really liked, and I was attracted to that. And I really saw a lot of myself in Pony Boy.
Interesting.
And, like, the way he sees the world and his interests and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked that. And so for a little while, I was attracted to, like, greaser culture. And I even wanted for a while to bleach my hair, because Pony Boy did it in the book. And it's funny because, like, obviously in the book, Pony Boy hates that his hair is blonde.
Yeah.
And so, but I just thought, I think, you know, when you're younger, it's like anything to emulate, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was a while where I even, like, asked my parents, I'm like, what would I have to do to bleach my hair? And they're like, why would you want to bleach your hair? Like, your hair is blonde enough already. But
it would have been funny if they would have let you. But.
And so then, you know, I read the book twice that year, because I technically read it for school as well with the rest of the kids. But it really stuck with me. And so then I fell in love with her writing, and then I started looking up her other books, and then started reading her other books and collecting them, and I'm still trying to get all of them. But I was really, really interested in the psychology of the characters and the friendships that they have. But I was also attracted to a lot of the issues.
Okay.
Which sounds really bad, but, you know, I was growing up in a very full house, like I've said before. I lived in a house with my grandparents, my family, and my cousin's family. And so I just kind of felt like I was stuck there, you know?
Mm.
And so the idea of, in The Outsider specifically, of living with a bunch of guys who are just friends, who've got your back despite the horrible circumstances, was kind of appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there was even a brief time where I was like, I was romanticizing the book, for sure. Like,
no,
I was like, I want to go sleep out in the yard like Pony Boy and Johnny did, and you know, stuff like that. Like, I wasn't realizing they were doing it because their situation was bad, but, like, I was just seeing it through 13-year-old eyes.
Yeah, no, I, not to get too anthropological, but I would speculate that a lot of boys are drawn to the pack idea. You know, you want your own pack. And maybe not always, or maybe it comes at different times in life. Because the more as you've been talking, and I've kind of been reflecting back on my high school years, and I start thinking back, and little things are popping up in my head, and I do remember at times wanting, maybe more in my freshman sophomore year, especially wanting friends and a friend group, and I think it eventually solidified in my junior and sophomore year. Junior and senior year, and then even post high school, there were still those times, but as much as I longed for it to be long, I wasn't willing to change myself to fit in, if that makes sense.
No. I agree. I was in a similar situation. There were a few times where like I would dress a little differently based off of like what I was doing or where I was going.
Okay.
So I'd fit in a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, but
yeah.
When it came down to it, I wasn't prepared to change who I was, which I'm very proud of now, which I'm very glad I was not willing to do that and be true to myself, even though I was still figuring it out, you know.
Yeah
But
because most people I think change themselves, that's
and I have seen that
for some of us. I think those of us who have learned to value who we are, maybe, because I mean, like you said, for you, for myself, I see that with my daughter, we refuse, while we do change enough to actually integrate with new people that do fit who with us as friends. And so I think for me, the really, it would have been interesting to have read this post-divorce.
Okay.
Because that's really when, for me, the desire for friends, because I came out of my divorce with almost no friends.
Sure.
You know, it's like you get married and you kind of get busy in life and everyone falls to the side. And I remember, you know, post-divorce thinking, wow, I really would like a group of friends. The Lord provide. I now have a group of friends. Handful of group of friends, yeah. You know?
Let's go beat up the socias. But that's one thing I like about the book is, I will say now, I'm keenly aware of the negative aspects of the characters. Like,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's obvious. Like, I am definitely of the frame of mind that you should not take justice into your own hands, and like you shouldn't be going out and fighting to prove a point or to prove how tough you are or things like that, which some of the characters do.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And obviously there are cursory characters who are much worse in the book. And so in comparison, like, the main characters are amazing. But but despite all that, one of the things I really enjoy about these characters, like the main characters and the main gang of the story, is you see how different they are from each other, and those who stand out, who still have each other's back because they're part of the gang.
Correct.
Like, Pony Boy is very different from the rest of them, and the gang always has his back.
Yeah,
and Derry is very different than the rest, and he's got their back, and vice versa, and so on. And obviously, like, there are some who are worse off than others, but you can definitely see, like, it doesn't matter that you're different. We're united with our similarities.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's really what a true friendships end up being.
Right.
There are those, it's those who take
none of them
you
had to
your...
earn that. Like, none of them had to go through anything to prove it.
But
like, they have moments where they want to prove they're tough and that they're manly, but they don't have to prove anything to their friends.
Exactly. And that's why they can, they, you know, they'll give them the space to cry. They'll do it in private, or he'll be like, I'm not looking when Pony Boy is throwing up.
Sick,
yeah, and so he's like, I'm not looking.
He's giving him the respect.
So they recognize the humanity of each other and give themselves, but they also are there for positive and for negative to some degree.
Right.
But I think that's what many friendships, like a true friendship, is. And I think that's what a lot of people, maybe, I think that's why when I was kind of reading a little about why people are drawn to it, there's that aspect of as well, where I think so many friendships end up being superficial.
Right.
And I think people long for that real, you know, for the friend who's not, like, I don't want to say they're altruistic, but in some ways, Pony Boy and Johnny end up being. More so than, like, where Deli and even one of the what was his name, Randy?
Right.
Where they're like, I wouldn't have done it. Or like, don't you ever do that again. Like, well, not to say that they couldn't.
It's funny because I think after the story, I think Randy would now, because of the circumstances of the story and because he grew to know Pony Boy.
Yeah. Well, because that's what, when he tells him at the end, you would have done it or something like that. Doesn't he, like, encourage
him at the
end?
Well, he says, I wouldn't have done it. And I don't remember what he says, but he says something like, you might.
Okay, I think I remember.
Where he's like, it's kind of like, you don't know, you might.
Yeah, you don't know the true value or the true, your true self.
Because I think even in the beginning of the book, I think Ponyboy would say, oh, these dumb, like in hypothetical, he would say, those dumb kids, I wouldn't go do anything. Mm. But because he is a good character, he does it. Like, he doesn't think about it. He just goes to save him. And Johnny is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, Dallas says, and in the book, like, let's just go. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But that's because, like, that's where he has, guess where he's become.
Yeah. So Dally is, he has already been to juvie. Mm-hmm.
And he's been in jail.
Oh, that's right. He was thrown in jail too.
And he was in jail in part because they say he was from New York.
Yeah.
And he was a part of like an actual murder case with the gangs in New York. And so like he's like hard. I think even like Derry like doesn't really like Dallas.
That's right. They do mention that.
Like he doesn't really want the boys hanging with Dallas. Mm-hmm. The only reason why, because technically Dallas isn't really a part of their gang
in the
book.
Mm-hmm.
And they only really interact with Dallas because there was like no one else.
Yeah.
And then when obviously Johnny kills Bob, the Soj, they have to go to someone who can help them, and they can't go. Obviously, Johnny's parents aren't going to help because they're a mess. And
yeah, your friend by circumstance, because I understand.
Well,
because
they
that.
Knew that Dallas could help them.
Yes.
And they had a connection already to him that they know they could trust him.
Yeah. No, I had a friend who, the only reason I was a friend with him is because, but at the time, because we carpooled together. And after that, it was like, in high school, everyone thought he was kind of annoying. But over time, as time went on, he became a part of the group. I mean, it's not quite the same. He wasn't like a...
He pigeonholed himself.
Well, it's like, in many ways, he kind of would, I know he would try to go to other groups and try to hang out with them, but in the end, we were the only ones who accepted him by default. And I'll be honest, he's a great guy, and I just saw him recently. And so, you know, it turned into a true friendship. But, and I think that's where Johnny sees that in Dally in regards to the note he sends at the end, that he sees the good in him despite the hardness that's been thrust on him from the circumstances.
There was a video I watched on YouTube. Give me a second. Let me look at the title real quick.
Okay.
I want to give credit where it's due. There was a video on YouTube called The Outsiders and the Price of Being Tough by Yara Zaid. And, you know, there's a couple of things in there that I was kind of like, eh, about. But one of the things I really liked about what she was saying is, she really truly made a point of expressing what it is about Johnny specifically that is so important to the story.
Okay.
And Ponyboy too as well, obviously. But Johnny is so innocent in the story that characters can't help but want to protect him.
Yeah.
Because of that. Mm-hmm. And Ponyboy's the same. It's just Johnny is so battered.
Oh, okay.
And so it's worse.
Yeah.
Because at least Ponyboy's got his brothers.
Yeah.
But Johnny doesn't really have anyone because his parents are so abusive.
Yeah.
And so, like, especially after Johnny was, like, beaten to a pulp by the Socias, including Bob. And so it's, in a way, Dallas became like a big brother to Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
The YouTuber was saying, in part, it's because he's seeing what he lost in himself.
Oh, okay.
And some of the other characters as well, but Dallas is the extreme.
Mm.
Because of everything he's been through.
Yeah.
And so that's why in the story, like, because he's just so used to violence. And his go-to emotion is just anger.
Mm.
And, you know, the argument is it's the only emotion he understands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people make the argument for toxic masculinity and stuff with some of the characters, and I'm not disagreeing to an extent, but because the idea is these characters were never shown how to have like a healthy emotion, and especially with Dallas. And so anytime he's sad, he just turns to anger because that's the only one he can work with.
Yeah.
And so like when he gets sad news, like with Johnny and stuff, it's just anger. Mm-hmm. Automatically. With anything, like when he finds out that Johnny killed the Soj, he's just matter of fact. He's like, oh, okay, wow, okay, well, this is what you got to do. You're going to take this train. You're going to take my gun. Because it's like business.
Yeah.
You know, like he's used to it. Mm-hmm. He's so jaded. Whereas, you know, Johnny and Ponyboy are like literally shivering and freaking out and don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But when Johnny talks about turning themselves in after Dallas went to go find them and get them food and stuff like that, Dallas is upset. He's like, you can't turn yourself in. And he's like, well, because Johnny feels bad because, you know, Ponyboy can go back to his family. Like, yeah. He thinks Ponyboy will be fine. And Dallas says, if you turn yourself in, like, you can go to jail. And he's like, you can't go to jail because you can't be like me, basically.
Yeah.
Like he's basically saying that he doesn't want the innocence and the good qualities beaten out of Johnny. And so when Johnny eventually dies, it's like the last bit of goodness and innocence in Dallas's life. That connection. And like, it was kind of like whatever he had to live for, essentially. And so that's like, he just gives up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's the tragedy of it, because he could have moved on. He could have had a better life, but he's so used to those negative aspects that he doesn't know how to respond. And so he just goes down the dark road.
Yeah. Funny enough, one of the things I did pick up in regards to kind of along those lines, and not so much about them particularly or that example, but one of the things I appreciated about Hinton's writing is that because she was writing as a child, as a teen, she left out the deeper philosophical underpinnings like you would see in Gatsby.
Sure.
And so I kind of appreciated that, because I've met people from all walks of life, and often those that are a little more human and real, when you're conversing with them, they're not talking about the wealth. It's like, yes, there's the class divide, the wealth inequities and whatever, but they're not angry about the philosophical or political aspect of it. They're more, when I've had conversations with them over a beer, you know, at a barbecue in a ghetto part of Anaheim. This is a true story. And they weren't talking about, you know, illegal immigration or other things that were relevant to them, but instead they were talking about the emotional and the real life impact of what life is for them and what's going on with inside them. And I appreciated that in her writing, where there was not a long paragraph on why the socias have had more.
Yeah, and it wasn't pedantic.
Exactly. It was a bit refreshing.
Well, and I think that's the other side of the story that has kept it in the hearts of people for so long, is the aspects of the book that bring people together.
Yeah.
Because in the book, it's literally the social divide coming together. And so even though there's a rumble in the story, like, it kind of has to be there because, one, catharsis, but it's like these two groups, that's all that they know, they have to come to this collision.
Correct. Yeah.
But you kind of get this idea of like, these collisions will continue, but maybe not with us. Like, this might be their last one.
Yeah.
And so you get these, you see the beginning of something. And the death of Bob at the hands of Johnny, who was defending himself, and Ponyboy, that was a catalyst for like a major change in at least key figures, if not everybody, because obviously there were greasers and socias who just didn't change and just became more angry.
Yeah.
But there were key figures like Cherry and Randy and Ponyboy and others who, and like, I would say to an extent, 2-Bit, who actually were growing and seeing the changes and wanting more and to fix things.
Yeah.
And there's hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I find that at the end of the book, there's hope. I really like that. And it's really easy for this to be on the nose. And I think it works a little bit better in the book than in the movie. But in the book, you get these moments like where Ponyboy's talking to Cherry, and even with Randy, where you get these moments where you see them coming together and focusing on commonality.
Yeah.
Similar to like the Greaser gang, where like they're brought together by similar circumstances. And so like they have the moment where it's, can you see the sunset from where you live? And they said, yeah, I see it real good.
Yeah.
And it's like, you both live in the same world. You see the same sunset. You experience similar things. It's just your life experiences, situations are different.
Correct. Yeah.
It's like, you're still people. And so like the world may view you differently, but you have similar struggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I loved those aspects of the book. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's considered a classic and why it's taught in schools. Obviously, there are schools out there who ban it and don't like it for like the graphic nature and the language.
Still to this day?
I think there are schools out there who I came across, like, it's on a list of banned books. So, and I mean, I don't disagree with that choice. You know, that's the choice.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things where it could be a tool if it's taught right. But
I mean, I could see why they would want to ban it in East LA or something, but
I think it's banned a bit more in like conservative areas where it's a little bit more legalistic, where it's like, this book's got killings and it's got language and it's got some sexual undertones, and
the banned book discussion is not really what people think it is today, so that makes more sense.
Yeah,
just like Huck Finn is now banned in progressive schools.
I know.
Which is kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say both sides of the political spectrum ban books for different reasons.
True, true. And they're both guilty of what they claim they're not. But I think in this case, a good teacher would be able to help their students navigate those aspects.
Yeah, because it has a human approach to it. There's some books out there that I'm okay with banning from schools.
Yeah.
And usually those are more pornographic and...
Oh yeah,
and things
yeah.
like that.
No, and even in regards, because there was one I read, my daughter had to read it in high school, I think it was sophomore year, and it was, I think it's called Bless Me Ultima.
I've heard of it.
Okay, and so I vowed to read everything she read in her English
That's
class
good.
With her. And in the end, there was some controversy with some parents over the book because of its ties to witchcraft, and it blatantly has Mexican Indian witchcraft tenets in it. And so it's, but at the same time, and I really have no desire to ever, so I don't plan on us doing a podcast on that anytime soon.
Okay.
Because there is a movie.
All right.
But it's not my favorite book. And I read it, maybe 2-3 years ago. And so I can see why. But at the same time, I think that if you do, like I said, with the same with this book, if you have a good teacher, you can navigate those aspects. And the other book, I think, was a little more simplistic in the main character as a child, and it was written by an adult. I would say it's a shame for this one, because I think for many, many young men and women, I think there's some really good lessons and things that could be pointed out by their teachers.
Yeah, I think if you're guided right.
Yes, yes.
We've discussed, I think there are way too many people out there, I would say majority of people out there, who just take a lot of things at face value.
Yeah.
And if one character does or says something, they just are automatically like, and get caught up in a tissy fit, you know, whatever. Is that the right word, tissy fit?
Hissy fit, I think, isn't it?
Hissy fit.
At least that's how my parents would say
it. I say things and I'm like, that doesn't sound right.
Well, at least you're using colloquialisms. I say regular English words and realize, it's not...
But I use a lot of old colloquialisms, too.
It's not pillow. Nobody sleeps on pillows, apparently.
That's not a word.
I know. It's pillow.
Mm-hmm.
We sleep on pillows.
Yep.
Just like we use pens to write and pins.
Stop. This is weird.
It's because I got made fun of with those words fairly recently. My ghetto accent.
Sure.
Yeah, no. Going back to the book. It's and after reading it, despite not liking it as a kid, I'm glad it's still taught.
Well, we're going to call it here. This one went a little bit longer, but I knew that we probably would. But before we end this episode, and in the next episode, we'll talk about the movie. So, have you changed your opinion then on this book?
I have, yes.
Because you were very against this book.
Yes, you were so right. I dreaded reading it.
The only reason why you chose to read it this time is because I think I slowly got you to a place where you said, okay, I've changed my mind on some of these things.
I was willing to give it another chance.
Mm-hmm. I think what's helped is what I've said is I think when we analyze these things
and
we start to realize that we do like at least parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, listeners out there, tune in next time where we'll talk about the 1983 film adaptation and the changes that were made, and some of the behind the scenes information as well.
Mm-hmm.
That one probably won't be as long of an episode, but we'll find out. Right. And if you all want to ask us any questions or anything, let us know. You can always send us an email or a comment or whatever. Mm-hmm. We want to hear what you have to say as well.
Yes.
It'd be fun to do a follow episode where we talk about some of the things that people sent to us, you know.
Mm-hmm. So please send us stuff. questions, great. Opinions.
And we'll catch you next time.
We'll talk to you next. See you next time.
See ya. Next time on Willing to Adapt. We're excited for this one. We're going to talk about the 1983 film by Francis Ford Coppola.
Patrick Swayze in kind of a rundown house, sitting on a couch.
No, that's the whole movie. Isn't that the plot of Ghost?
Probably.
The biggest problem that the original 83 version has, and I think is still kind of in the director's cut, is a lot of Ponyboy's growth is missing.
Many people kind of aggregately felt that the film compresses the timeline.
Oh, for sure.
And streamlines the plot to fit in a cinematic format, focusing more on action and key emotional beats. This makes the movie feel faster paced, but less introspective.
So S.E. Hinton was on set a lot for the filming, and she grew to really know Francis Ford Coppola and all the main characters, the main actors. And so even today, like, she's still in communication with them and stuff. And she asked him, would it help if you threw up? And he said, maybe.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.